Hello, and welcome to Switchblade Sisters, the podcast where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. Every week here on the podcast, we invite a new female filmmaker, a writer, director, actor, producer, and we talk in depth about their favorite genre film, maybe one that influenced their own work. I'm film critic Katie Walsh, and today we have writer-director Channing Godfrey Peoples. Welcome.
Hi, Katie. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so happy you're here. I love your film, Miss Juneteenth. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Channing. Channing Godfrey Peoples is an MFA graduate of the USC School of Cinematic Arts, and in 2018 was selected as one of Filmmaker Magazine's 25 New Faces of Independent Film. As an African-American woman, her films are character-driven stories focusing on the resilience of the human spirit and often featuring Black women at a turning point in their lives. Her short film, Red, is a DGA Student Jury Award winner, and she also wrote two episodes on season 3 of Queen Sugar. Most recently, her feature debut, Miss Juneteenth, premiered at the U.S. Dramatic Competition at the 2020 Sundance Film Festival and won the Lewis Black Lone Star Award at the 2020 South by Southwest Film Festival. It was also recently nominated for two Gotham Awards for Breakthrough Director and Best Actress for Nicole Beharie. And it was in the top 10 films for The Washington Post and Time. So congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
It's such a pleasure to have you here on the podcast. And today you have chosen to talk about Pedro Almodovar's Volver. So why did you choose this film?
Yes. I mean, there's so many. I know that we're going to talk about this film over a little bit of time, but, you know, let me count the ways. I just remember seeing this film and I didn't realize that it had come out so long ago. It was 2006.
Right.
I was like, wow, this film is 14 years old and it feels like so contemporary, you know, and feels like I just saw it yesterday. But I remember seeing it and really being moved by the intimacy of this mother-daughter story. It spans multiple genres. So, you know, it's a drama and it's a comedy and it's a, you know, crime film in some places. And, you know, we probably will get into more of, you know, how many genres it spans. But, you know, I just remember being riveted by this mother-daughter story, but it's also multi-generational, you know, and it really is navigating what family means. You know, there's family estrangement that's happening and there's a coming together, and it's really women pulling together to get stuff done and also to protect each other. So, you know, I loved that about the film. And, you know, when you reached out, I was like, yeah, that's the one I want to do.
You know, I hadn't seen it since it came out, and I just rewatching it, I was like blown away. I mean, I remember liking it a lot when I saw it, but I was just blown away at how great it is. I don't think I fully got it, you know, years in 2006 or when it came out. And I feel like being a bit older now, I was like, oh, I actually get this. And the story of women connecting and taking care of each other in sort of ways that are outside almost like male culture. It's like a very specific sort of female community. And I was really moved by that and the protectiveness, like you mentioned. And I just, Penelope Cruz is amazing. She is just so outstanding in this. I could not get over how great she was.
She's completely present, you know, and, you know, I've talked a little bit about it spanning multiple genres, but, you know, there's this really like naturalistic approach in the acting that I aspire to in my work as well. And I loved that about it. And, you know, it's interesting how you said that you had a different, you had different thoughts about it, you know, after viewing it another time than you did in 2006, because, you know, I have the perspective now of, you know, I have a young toddler myself, a daughter myself, you know, and my approach changed from having written Miss Juneteenth, you know, as really as a daughter, having watched my mother navigate life. And then when I became a mom, you know, it changed my approach to Miss Juneteenth. And so I have the same thoughts when I watch Volver. You know, now it's like I watched it again yesterday and it was just like this really visceral reaction to, like, you know, what would I do if somebody messed with my daughter?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I watched it in a different way as well. I had a different perspective for sure.
You're like, I'm getting the freezer. Anyway, we'll get into this.
I understood the freezer moment in a different kind of way.
Okay, well, so before we get into the plot specifics, which we will, just going to give a quick spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen Volver. Today's episode will contain spoilers, but that shouldn't stop you from listening before you watch. Like we always say, it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes a movie worth watching. Still, if you want to pause this episode and watch it, now is your chance. And here is a little quick plot synopsis, maybe not quick, but it's a plot synopsis of Pedro Almodovar's Volver. So written and directed by Spanish auteur Pedro Almodovar, Volver is a 2006 melodramedy about a multi-generational family of women. The plot originated from a story that actress Marisa Paredes told Almodovar during the shooting of his 1995 film, The Flower of My Secret. He incorporated it as a plot point in that film as a fictional screenplay titled The Freezer. Volver premiered at Cannes in 2006, where the ensemble of actresses shared the Best Actress prize and Almodovar won Best Screenplay. And star Penelope Cruz was nominated for Best Actress Oscar at the 2007 Academy Awards. She stars as Raimunda, a fiercely protective mother to her daughter Paula, played by Johanna Cobo, and her sister Soledad, Lola Dueñas. Raimunda and Soledad's parents died in a fire 3 years ago, and they continue to return to their home village in La Mancha to maintain their graves and check on their elderly aunt Paula, Chus Lamprave, and friend Agustina, Blanca Portillo, whose mother has been missing for years and in fact went missing on the same day their parents died. Raimunda and Paula live with Paula's father Paco, Antonio de la Torre, who one day attempts to rape the teenage Paula, claiming that he's not her biological father. Paula stabs and murders him in self-defense, and Raimunda goes into Mama Bear problem-solving mode. She disposes of Paco's body by hiding it in the freezer of her friend Emilio's abandoned restaurant, and while she's there, a young man from a film crew stops by, hoping to find a place for catering. Raimunda wants to make some extra money, so she starts cooking for the crew, secretly using Emilio's restaurant. So the crisis with Paco and Paco's body means that Raimunda has to beg off of attending Aunt Paula's funeral, but Soledad attends and she hears rumors that their mother's ghost has been tending to Aunt Paula in her final days. And as she's leaving, she discovers a stowaway. It is her mother, Irene, played by Carmen Mora, who is back from the dead. Is she a ghost? Maybe she is. We don't really know. Nevertheless, Soledad brings her home and puts her mom to work in her home salon, posing as a Russian immigrant. Meanwhile, Raimunda is still working for the film crew. Paco's body is still in the freezer. Soledad is keeping their mother hidden in her apartment. But soon, the granddaughter Paula is secretly hanging out with her abuela, too. And Agustina, who has been diagnosed with cancer, has been begging Raimunda to tell her if her mother appears to her. She wants to know if Irene's spirit can offer information about her own missing mother. But the truth always comes out. Agustina reveals to Raimunda that her mother and Raimunda's father were having an affair. And then Raimunda sniffs her mother out at her sister's apartment. And the two women connect for the first time since they have been estranged since Raimunda was a teenager. It turns out that Raimunda's father was sexually abusing her and impregnating her with her daughter, Paula. So Paula is both her daughter and her sister. And Irene never forgave herself or him. And she sent Raimunda away to live with Aunt Paula. She also reveals that she did not die in the fire. She's not actually a ghost, but that when she found her husband and Agustina's mother in bed together, she set the fire that killed them and went into hiding, basically faking her own death, taking care of Aunt Paula, and Agustina's mother's ashes were buried as Irene's ashes. She also reveals herself to Agustina, and she pledges to take care of her as she's dying from cancer. And she and Raimunda share a moment and embrace the ghosts of their tumultuous past, finally put to rest. So that is Volver. It's an amazing film. And I thought it was interesting because Almodovar has a quote that I found where he's talking about the film. And he was saying that he doesn't like to synopsize the film in just a few lines which tell the plot of the movie because he says it betrays the tone of the movie. He says, if you only tell the story without explaining other elements, it looks like something very outrageous. The movie is not represented in just a few lines. The important parts of my movie are the tone, all the characters, and the way they are directed. and the way I think I make it believable, something which in two lines looks rather unbelievable. And I think that's really true of this film. Like, it's, you can say the plot, oh, she, you know, hides a body, which is another of genre film that I love. I love like hiding a body genre films, but it's really so much more about the performances, the place, the textures, the comedy mixing with the drama. And I was wondering, you know, how you approached tone and sort of the elevator pitch of Miss Juneteenth, which is sort of like a mother puts her daughter in a pageant, but it's really so much more than that. It's about her reckoning with her family, her past, her present, and all of the things that color in the plot, really.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I was watching Volver again, you know, I think some of the things thematically that I'm navigating in Miss Juneteenth, you know, you see in Volver, just like how the past informs the present. And, you know, really, you know, I love that you talked about texture in Volver too, because that was a big thing in Miss Juneteenth was, you know, the elevator pitch that, you know, you've boiled it down to is, I mean, that's absolutely true. That's what it could be. But there's this entire world, you know, that surrounds that. And I really had conceived of the film in the community that I grew up in. And it was difficult to be able to describe it because it was something that I had lived, you know, and had inspired the film. And I knew the community was this place that, you know, in which the people carried themselves with a sense of like determination. But they also had, you know, there was this pomp and circumstance that was prevalent in the community and there was a grace about them, you know? And so I was trying to find a way to integrate that into this film. And, you know, it meant I really had to capture the community in this really like super authentic way. So the film is really populated by real people and, you know, a real world. And I feel like that's what, you know, Volver captures in a way. You know, you feel like that these are real folks. And it's also done, like one of the things that I really love about the film too, is that this world is shown in this really colorful way, you know? And that inspired Miss Juneteenth as well, because I feel like there's a color to this world that's being captured and you want to be able to display that as much as possible. I fell in love with the film.
Did you always want to make your first feature in your hometown or the place where you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the answer is yes, in short. And I was always trying to get to that. And I realize that now because I had gone to film school at USC Film School in LA. And it was interesting because even right in the middle of LA, I was always searching for little pockets of places that would make my films look Southern. Oh. you know, so I would do these little, you know, like when you start film school, they're like 5-minute shorts here and there. And, you know, I would try to find, you know, little places in the community that I could have that aesthetic. And then as I went on in film school, you know, I eventually came back and, you know, did my thesis film in the same specific community. And I think that helped me establish kind of this way in which I approached, you know, even creating Miss Juneteenth, there's a very community focused approach. And that was really shaped by me, you know, wanting to have the film be as authentic as possible. So I'm actually shooting in, you know, these particular spaces that I grew up, you know, I grew up going to, just like the bar in the film. You know, I can remember, you know, sneaking into that bar early in life. And, you know, the funeral home is like is owned by family friends, you know. And so these are like multi-generational businesses that have chose to remain in this particular community that's now unfortunately being gentrified. But these Wow. are folks that have held on to these businesses and their legacy businesses that get passed down through generations. And they say, we want to stay in this neighborhood no matter what, you know. So that was absolutely informing the film in every way. And I thought it was entirely vital for me to shoot in this community because I knew it so intimately.
I was reading about Almodovar's inspiration for the film, and he was really inspired by Italian neorealism and these Sophia Loren type heroines and the films of Visconti, Pasolini, and Fellini. And One of the things that I love that he was trying to emulate, he was trying to get Penelope Cruz to emulate, is, you know, are these Sophia Loren type characters and heroines who are these really earthy women. And so one of the ways that he helped her achieve that was to wear a fake behind. He padded her butt. And apparently Penelope did not want to take it off at the end of the movie. She was very attached to it, but it helped create this character. But he said he wanted, you know, he wanted her to emulate these curvy women. And he also said that it sort of made her feel like made her look more sort of like matronly and connected to the earth. I think she pulls it off well. I love her wardrobe in this, but I'm curious what kinds of influences and inspiration you took, both for the film itself and the style. Like, were there films that you were watching, or, you know, and then sort of the second part is like, what, how did you work with Nicole and in order to draw out her performance, and did you give her any specific inspiration?
That's a lot of questions at once.
I know, it's a lot. We can break it down.
You have to remind me. I'm still stuck on the padding.
I know, isn't that funny?
Yeah, but I mean, I get it. Like, I grew up with, you know, Turquoise, the lead character, is inspired by, you know, many of the women in my life, my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, you know, the women in the community that, you know, I was talking about earlier, you know, folks having being determined and carrying themselves with grace. I especially that women in the community definitely embodied that, you know, were completely like hardworking, but you could, you know, it always made it look easy, which is silly because, you know, as a woman in the world, you know, I know what it is to balance now, you know, work and raising children and, you know, wanting to be involved in community and things like that. And it's a constant balancing act. So, you know, I wanted to bring that to the film and the portrayal of Turquoise. And, you know, it's interesting when you talk about Penelope Cruz's character, Raymunda, and the physicality that he wanted to bring to the role. Because I have always had this idea, you know, that Turquoise, you know, had this sense of, you know, she almost feels like a diamond in the rough, you know?
Yeah.
Because there were so many women in my life that felt like that to me. And they were women that were, you know, colorful and lived out loud and were full bodied. And, you know, almost all of them, including myself, had a kitchen table story of like that one bad partner in their life, you know, they had to navigate and get past, you know, to realize a better version of themselves. And so I definitely wanted to bring that to the film. And I think it's a film filmmaker, I have a very, very naturalistic approach when it comes to acting and performance. I'm definitely the director who's gonna, you know, drive the sound folks crazy. Sorry, sound folks. But I'm saying to them early on, this is not a film where I feel like I need my actors projecting for sound. I need them to be conversational, you know, and really listening and responding to each other. So if you have to compensate, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just my approach. And I'm probably forgetting the other 8 questions you asked me at once.
Well, I mean, it was just... I know I threw too much on the table there. But,
No. But they're all great questions. I want to get to them.
Right.
Well, you talked about film influences.
Well, but let's take a quick break, and we will come back. We'll talk about films when we get back from our break. So we're going to take a quick break and join us when we talk to Channing Godfrey Peoples about Miss Juneteenth and Volver.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself, and I'm Morgan Rhodes, and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Switchblade Sisters. We are talking to Channing Godfrey Peoples about Volver and her film Miss Juneteenth. So before the break, we were about to talk about any kinds of cinematic inspiration that you had taken going into shooting your feature debut. And I was just wondering if there are any films that you had revisited or watched the first time that helped you kind of get into directing mode for your first film.
You know, it's interesting because when I talk about like my interest in cinema, I don't know that it necessarily started with films. I grew up going to community theater. Like my mom, there was a community theater that she was involved in this very same neighborhood in which we shot Miss Juneteenth called Sojourner Truth.
Amazing.
After the abolitionists, and I remember going there and like really like falling in love with like story and character. Like I got to see really like, I know now that they were like these complex like Black plays being performed like Pearly and For Color Girls and things like that, that the community were just coming together to perform. And so that, you know, initially inspired me, I think, about story, character, and acting in particular. And then later, I really like fell in love with literature. And, mm-hmm. you know, I would read the greats like Toni Morrison, like Alice Walker, like Dr. Maya Angelou. And I mean, they really informed like this idea of what it was to have these stories in which Black women were centered, you know, and really these complex stories. So I'm always inspired by those things. But as far as films, I didn't watch any particular films, but they're films that I just love that I think have informed me as a filmmaker. I, you know, it's no secret that I love, love, love Charles Burnett and his work. You know, I remember screenshotting Killer of Sheep in film school, every single frame. And that was before they had these services, you know, on the internet where you could just go and people's, you know, have these films up that they screenshot. And, he has another film, My Brother's Wedding, that I love. I also loved, Julie Dash's Daughters of the Dust, for its specificity of place, you know, Volver is on my list, which is, you know, what I've chosen, obviously. Jonathan Demme was always an inspirational filmmaker for me. One of my favorite films from Jonathan Demme is a film called Rachel Getting Married.
I love that movie.
Oh, I do too. And it was written by this really fantastic woman, Jenny Lumet, who, you know, I'm obsessed with her writing. And I remember seeing that film and just feeling like, you know, I was literally going through the experience, you know, with this character. And it was wonderful. Another film that, you know, I've rediscovered, I've watched it way before Miss Juneteenth, but I was in an interview one day and the critic said, oh, you know, this film reminds me of Claudine. And I said, that was directed by John Barry. And I was like, absolutely. Like this film, like Claudine was totally informative for me, you know? And, you know, you got to see, a Black woman and motherhood and navigating challenges with the sense of grace. And so that was definitely informative for me. And there are tons of others, but, those are some big ones.
I have another quote from Almodovar, which is sort of tied to this idea that we've been talking about.
I'll take them because I obsessively watch his interviews. And he's got all the good quotes.
Yes, yes. Well, he's talking about his mother, who obviously he's, you know, inspired by the women in his life. And that's what I love about his films as well, which is that you can tell he just like loves women so much and respects them and the feminine ways of knowing, which I feel is kind of present in this film. But he says, my mother is present in the whole movie, more even here than in All About My Mother. In this case, all the locations were the places that I used to live when I was a child. Her presence here was much stronger. And also because I'm talking about my roots, when I go back to La Mancha, it's like going back to my mother's breast. La Mancha is represented for me more than in the language itself or the geographical region. It's more the memory of my mother. I lived there for the first 8 years of my life, and my mother brought her with her La Mancha. She was very much from that place, and she always spoke in the way that they talked in La Mancha. There, we have a very specific, special way of talking. We have a dialect that is very specific to that place. My mother always talked like that, so she always represented to me La Mancha. So that sounds a lot like the, you know, what you were doing as well in creating Miss Juneteenth, is like, we have to get the dialect right. We have to get the places, the locations, and in a way paying tribute. You know, it sounds like it, with the character of Turquoise, you are paying tribute to the women that inspired you growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's interesting because, like, even in the script is written in dialect, you know?
Oh, okay.
And and I write literally how I hear folks talk. You know, and it was important to me to have it that way. Like, that was always my approach. And I don't think I ever even considered, you know, now in hindsight, I think about, you know, the script going out, would people get it? I don't even think that I ever, you know, gave it much consideration. I was like, this is the film and this is how folks talk. And this is the specificity of the world here. And I just have to be able to capture that for myself, like, in order to even make this film. It was just like a compulsion, you know? Mm-hmm. So I love that quote. I just, because I believe it, you know, it's absolutely important to the authenticity of the story that you're telling and the world, at least for me as a filmmaker. Like, I'm, everything is completely informed by that. It, like, mm-hmm. Turquoise's experience, you know, within this world, within the world of the bar, like, you know, she's still being seen as Miss Juneteenth in the bar, you know, and then she goes back to the pageant world and she's seen as someone who's having fallen from grace, you know? And so that informed everything.
Yeah. I love the emphasis on work that I saw in both films. Like, you know, in Volver, it's really women who are doing work that are like, that's outside of the normal economy, right? It's Soledad has the hair salon, the illegal hair salon in her apartment. And there's the friend who's the sex worker, who helps her dispose of the body and lends her money and stuff. And you know, it's all these women sort of helping each other in their own sort of economies. And even Raymunda, like, using the restaurant, she's outside, you know, she's kind of doing it under the table. So, but I also love that in Miss Juneteenth, like, you know, she's scrubbing toilets, she's mopping floors, she's tending bar. Like, she is a worker and a hustler, and like, she's not, I think it's hard. There's the line where the woman's like, I never thought I would see Miss Juneteenth like scrubbing a toilet or something. But, you know, it's part of her, you know, sort of struggle with like, what could I have been? But she's also not above doing it. Right. So I wondered how you sort of approached work and what it means for the character.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting. First of all, Katie, you are breaking this down. I mean, I'm just looking at you like, whoa. I mean, this film was, you know, it's interesting. Well, I see why I chose this film. I think it's a bit...
I always find these connections. I'm like, this is, people are like, what are you talking about?
This is great. You know, when I think about work, I remember, you know, growing up and my mother, you know, my mother's family, they weren't wealthy, but what they had was an emphasis on education. I remember my grandmother insisting that all of her kids go to college, you know? And my mother, you know, despite having education, you know, she was gainfully employed, you know, for much of my life, she was a single mother, you know, navigating. I remember seeing her navigating motherhood and, you know, trying to reconcile her own dreams. But I also remember my mom, you know, like, she'll probably kill me for telling all her business, but, you know, cleaning offices, you know, when she had to, you know, and she was always in the spirit of that. And she, you know, this really like determined, graceful person who would do what she had to do, you know, to take care of her kids. And so I wanted to bring the spirit of that to Miss Juneteenth, you know, and I've often, in the spirit of, you know, being an artist and focusing on getting my art out in the world, have been that way too. You know, you do what you have to do to get it done. And, you know, that's one of the things that I love about Volver, is just like you've talked about,
the illegal beauty salon, yeah. you know, and a woman who is working as a sex worker. But these are approached in this very like respectful, naturalistic way. It's just part of the world is women getting it done. And those are the women that I knew growing up, you know,
absolutely,
like,
yeah.
you know, somebody would, you know, they braid hair and you go get your hair braided, you know, at their house. That's what it is. You know, that's the world. And so I love that about the film. I wanted to bring it to Miss Juneteenth. I wanted to, you know, and I was always trying to find a way to show that, you know, Turquoise is working at the bar. She's working at the funeral home doing makeup. These are my friends that have done these jobs, you know, my friends who are, you know, younger folks doing this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just natural. It's just part of the world. And I love it.
Yeah, I think Volvere, like, it really evokes just this strong women sense of like, we just do what we have to do to get it done. And there's no real question. And then that's why it's so believable when the Paco event happens, where the Paco event, I'm like talking around it, Paco's murder happens, where she just right away is like, okay, what are we going to do? I'm going to get it done. I have no problem. Like, you really believe it because you're like, all of these women are so strong and capable. Like, they can do anything. They're like superheroes.
Yes. I mean, completely. And, you know, more than anything now as a mother, you literally are a superhero every day.
Yes.
Like, to keep, and I only have one child, you know, but to keep a little human being alive and keep going and keep food, you know, it's the constantly juggling. And it's interesting because, like, on paper, you know, I had a tougher love version of Turquoise on paper. And then after I had my daughter, you know, the film changed and morphed a lot because I realized, you know, I always knew that the balancing act was there and watching my mother. But I didn't understand that I understood differently after I became a mom was that after my daughter was born, there was this intimate connection that I can't even describe here. You know, there was instantly like, it was joy and terror at the same time. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is my person. Like, I love her. Oh my gosh. You know, she was smiling. I was smiling, you know, but there was also this sense of terror that I had to, you know, take care of this little human being when it had been me for so long, just, you know, hustling to get my films done. And, you know, like, it's not anything I can describe, but it absolutely informed the film because like I was constantly, when you talk about kind of working with Nicole and the actors, I was constantly jumping in and saying, you know, no matter what we do, we have to find the joy of Kai and Turquoise's bond. And I definitely see that in Volvere as well, in Raymond and her daughter's relationship. You know, you see like their intimacy come in and out. And I love that about the film. And like I said, I think this film has been more inspirational than I even realized until I had this conversation with you, Katie.
Well, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we will continue talking about Volvere and Miss Juneteenth.
Hi, I'm James, host of Minority Corner, which is a
podcast that's all about intersectionality. It's hosted by James with a guest host every week,
discussing all sorts of wonderful issues, nerdy and political,
pop culture,
black queer feminism,
race, sexuality,
news.
You're gonna learn your history, their self-empowerment, and it's told by what feels like your best friend.
Why should someone listen to Minority Corner?
Why not?
Oh my god, free stuff.
There's not free stuff.
The listeners of Minority Corner will enjoy some necessary LOLs, but mainly a look at what's happening in our world through a colorful lens.
People will get the perspective of marginalized communities.
I feel heard. I feel seen.
Like you said, you need to understand how to be more proactive in your community, and this is a great way to get started.
Join us every Friday on Max Fun or wherever you get your podcast.
Minority Corner.
Because together we're the majority.
We are back, Switchblade Sisters, talking to Channing Godfrey Peoples. I have a question about your film, which is about the title, because I'm curious if you ever felt like you had to name it something different as you were in the process, because not a lot of people know about Juneteenth. In fact, I think every white person in America figured out what Juneteenth was this year. I'm just curious, like, was that always the title? Did you ever feel like it was going to be an obstacle towards marketing the film, or were you always sort of like bound to it as part of your story?
So Miss Juneteenth is a title. It's interesting because I literally, when I talk about, you know, creating stories that are, you know, really focused on, they're like character heavy stories. I literally always start with the character's name. And so a lot of times when I start the film, I'm thinking that the film will be named after the character, right? And it, that's the working title for a long time. And as kind of the elements started coming together, and for me, it's like, I can't even explain my process. I just know that, you know, like I was pulling from Juneteenth, which was such an integral part of my life. You know, it was almost the fabric of my life. I didn't even realize it was unusual until I went to film school and I was telling people, you know, on June 19th, happy Juneteenth. And people would just kind of look at me like, what? And I'd have to explain it, you know? So for mm-hmm. me, it was just such a, you know, it was something that I looked forward to annually as a kid, but like, what I remember most about it was the centerpiece of this day, and that was the Miss Juneteenth pageant. And now I realize as an adult how formative it was for me. It was like I got to see at a young age as a young Black girl in conservative Texas, frankly, these young Black women on stage, and they, for me, looked super confident and super hopeful. And they were all, you know, different shapes, sizes, you know, skin tones. It was just a beauty that now I really cherish. And so as I started kind of digging deeper into this idea of Juneteenth and Miss Juneteenth, and, you know, started thinking about what kind of stories have resonated closely with me, and they are mother-daughter stories, you know, and my own journey, you know, with watching my mom in life and later becoming a mom, you know, all of these things eventually informed this film. And I just knew, you know, somewhere along the way, and I don't remember, Katie, the specific moment in which I said Miss Juneteenth, you know, but I do remember, I can say, I remember researching, you know, the Miss Juneteenth pageant. There's like a local community organization that puts it on every year, and kind of digging in and saying, hey, you know, can you all connect me to, you know, Miss Juneteenth, just so that I can talk to them and talk about their experiences. And, you know, sometimes there were a couple of them that they just couldn't reach, you know? And so I started getting more and more interested in like, you know, you have these Miss Juneteens who have all gone on to great success. The community knows about them and they're proud of them. What happens to the ones I can't find, you know? And then Turquoise's journey was born. And along the way, you know, there was just a moment, I just can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember saying this film is called Miss Juneteenth, you know, and it really became more than just about the name of this pageant. It became about this woman and, you know, this dream deferred and finding a way to, she's been locked into this idea of who she was in the past and searching for her own freedom late in life, which is essentially thematically, you know, what Juneteenth, you know, represents. You know, the enslaved people in Texas unfortunately found out they were free almost 2.5 years after everybody else, you know?
Right.
And so thematically, you know, you're tying that to this idea of Turquoise's journey and what freedom means to her. And I was literally, you know, thinking about what freedom meant for each of the characters, but especially Turquoise.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. I hadn't made the connection between her freedom and the freedom that is symbolized by Juneteenth as a celebration, but that's so interesting. I also wanted to ask about Ronnie, the character played by Kendrick Sampson, who's such a great actor. And I also thought about him in relationship to some of the men in Volvaire, because, you know, Volvaire is such a, like, there's like men barely figure into the world there. There's all, you know, they kind of don't. I love the guy who's on the film crew. I can't remember his name because he's just this like very sweet, cute, like guy that she flirts with, that Raymunda flirts with. But they don't really, you know, aside from kind of doing bad things, you know, as her father and as Paco do, they're so inconsequential. It's really about the relationship between women and mothers. But, you know, for Turquoise, she's got this relationship with Ronnie, and he's sort of like not all that helpful, but he's kind of nice to have around. So how did you see him sort of like functioning in her journey? Yeah, is he dragging her down, or is he helping her move forward?
One of the things that Ronnie says to her is that they have a history together. And so I think, you know, for me, their relationship was always revolved around that history, you know, and this obvious chemistry that they have between one another. But one of the things that I wanted to make sure to try to bring to the film was the fact that both of them are really, you know, their approach to each other and to their daughter in particular is revolved around, like, how do I parent, mm-hmm. you know? And so Ronnie, even in, you know, his dynamic with Turquoise, he's still trying to do what he thinks is the best thing for his daughter. You know, there's some choices that Turquoise is making that he doesn't understand. Like, he thinks that, you know, Kai, the daughter, could benefit from not, you know, an $800 dress, you know, not $800 not being spent on a dress. Like, there's mm-hmm. a different way that they could approach parenting in that way. So, you know, I just wanted to, you know, I talked a little bit about those kitchen table stories earlier, you know, which women talked about their partners and things like that. But I wanted to him to be human. You know, mm-hmm. that was important to me, to like be able to bring some of the nuance of his experience to the film. And Kendrick Sampson as an actor, you know, definitely brought that, I think, to the role. There's a specificity in which he approaches the film. He's also from Houston, Texas, which is different than Fort Worth, you know, where the film is based. But, you know, he definitely brought that experience as well, just the experience of being a Texan. So, mm-hmm. you know, loved his performance.
Did you have to say, this is, these are the nuances in Houston and versus Fort Worth? That's so interesting. You would just be like, oh, you're from Texas. Great. I mean, I'm not from Texas. So I'm like, he's from Texas. Awesome. But you're like, nope, Houston is different from Fort Worth.
Yeah. I mean, people, he already knew though, because like people are so territorial, you know, about, I mean, even in Fort Worth and Dallas, which are 30 minutes apart, you know, like, you're from Dallas, you're from Fort Worth. You know, people have their specific, like, you know, they put their roots down and say, I'm from here. So, you know, it was interesting because when Kendrick came in, you know, there's approach, like we talked about, we set Nicole down with a voice coach, you know, mm-hmm. But with him, he's like listening to folks from Fort Worth and, you know, picking up on the little nuances in the way things are said and adjusting in the moment, you know, is really spectacular.
Mm-hmm. That's great to have a fellow Texan to bring that flavor and that essence to the film as well.
Yeah, but I mean, the community folks will correct you.
Oh,
I mean,
that's good.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Because you had a lot of people who are from that area in the film, right?
Right, definitely. So they mm-hmm. will say, no, we say it like this. So, and they, you know, they're there. They had a, you know, when I talk about the community, I get a little overwhelmed because they have such an investment in having made this film. Even like, you know, I don't know if you remember the parade in the film. Mm-hmm. We basically repurposed a July 4th parade for Juneteenth because of shooting schedule. And there's this community called Como in Fort Worth. And it's a largely Black community who take great pride in putting their parade on, July 4th parade on every year. And we had been in conversation with them for a while about like coming into this parade and repurposing it for Juneteenth, which I think is appropriate, by the way. And they totally, people come from all over to come to this parade and they totally embraced us and let us in. So there was, I couldn't have made the film without the community's investment.
Absolutely. It seems like a really collective experience for just this place and for you and everyone that inspired the film. And that really comes through. Well, I could just talk to you all day, but I think we are going to end here. Thank you so much for being on our show and talking about Volvere and your film Miss Juneteenth, and congratulations on all the awards and nominations and things that are coming through.
You.
So thank you so much. And this has been a great conversation.
Thank you to you. Thank you to Almodovar for making this film. Thank you for Volver. Thank you, Penelope Cruz. Thank you. It's just so many wonderful elements in this film. And it's something I'll continue to watch over and over again.
And Channing, can you tell us where can people watch Miss Juneteenth?
Yeah, there's a bunch of places to watch Miss Juneteenth right now. I'm trying to keep track of them all myself. You can see it on Canopy right now. You can see it on BET Plus. You can see it on Amazon, Apple, Video on Demand, and anywhere you just watch your films. It's available everywhere. So check it out.
Yes, go watch it. And Canopy, just need a public library card. So thank you so much, Channing. This has been great.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much for listening to Switchblade Sisters. If you would like to tell us what you think of the show, you can tweet at us at Switchblade Pod or email us at switchbladesisters@maximumfun.org. And please check out our Facebook group too. That's facebook.com/groups/Switchblade Sisters. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.